Seen you locked and changed, didn't ease my pain. Left me feeling ashamed out in the rain. Can't explain the pain, how I stay sane. Don't like the game, will it ever change?
Everyone, I am Dr. Tommy Watson, and welcome to another episode of Resilient Stories Podcast, where we share the grit and glory behind the stories of amazing people like you who have bounced back from adversity and failure to want to live the best lives on purpose. Today's show is being sponsored by Million Dollar Business Pathway, where we believe everyone has a story to tell and to sell. You want to learn how to tell and sell your story? Go to tawatson.com under the programs and product page and click on Million Dollar Business Pathway to get yourself started. So, folks, are you guys ready for another amazing show today? Joining me, I have the one and only Dr. Marquita Blades. Good morning. Yay. Good morning, or good afternoon, rather.
Good afternoon, Dr. Watson. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. How about yourself?
I'm doing great.
It is a pleasure to have you on. I'm so excited to hear more about your story as well. Dr. Blades, for the folks who may not necessarily know who you are, can you briefly introduce yourself to the audience, please?
Yes. So again, my name is Dr. Marquita Blades. I live in Powder Springs, Georgia, which is northwest of the city of Atlanta, probably about 20 or 30 minutes away. And I am Georgia born and raised. I was actually raised in a small city south of Atlanta, Griffin, Georgia.
Okay.
Went to school here, started my career here. I spent 16 years working in Metro Atlanta school districts as a high school science teacher. Wow. And I also managed summer STEM programs all around the country for about 10 or 12 years as well.
Wow.
And in 2016, I transitioned from teaching for the school system into teaching independently. And I'll talk more about that as we get into my story. So now I just divide my time between here and the United States. I mean, here in Panama. See, I wish I was in Panama. I'm saying the United States. Between here and Panama in Central America. And I work, again, as an independent educator and as a realtor.
That is awesome. And then you have a book out, right?
Well, I have several books. Okay. The book behind me, Powerful Teaching Strategies, is a learning framework that I started after I resigned from teaching in 2016. And it's just a collection of my best and most effective teaching strategies from 16 awesome. Years in the classroom that I share with other teachers to help them get more student engagement and to also enjoy teaching as much as I did.
That is awesome. I love great teachers. I love teachers who are innovative and creative in the work they're doing. And that field of STEM is one that we got to definitely get more young people interested in, and particularly young people of color as well.
Yes, we do.
Dr. Blades, you know, our podcast centers on bringing amazing people like yourself on and having you talk a lot about a situation that was very, very challenging for you. You mentioned 2016. You and I had a chance to talk a little about 2016. Talk to us a little bit about what was taking place in your life prior to what you discovered in 2016. You're a teacher, teaching 16 years. How are things going? Tell us about that.
Well, in 2016 is when it all came to kind of like a powder keg, and that's when I resigned from teaching. But it started in 2008 or 9. Like, it's a blur now. I don't even remember which year. But I literally woke up one morning. Let me back up a little bit. I should preface by telling you the kind of lifestyle I had. Sure. So you all can really understand the spiral down that I'm about to get into. I was very active. Of course, I said I was a teacher, but I was the yearbook advisor. I literally lived at school. Single woman, no children, you know, at the prime of my teaching career. So active in the community with my sorority. I danced at my church. I worked out like 5 days a week. I was a Zumba instructor. I had it going on.
Yeah.
Okay. Just to sum it all up. And really just living and enjoying life. And I started waking up some mornings not able to move my limbs. Like one morning, it might be my left arm would be completely limp, or my right arm the next day, or sometimes I couldn't move my legs without having to like physically move them out of the bed to start moving. And it got to a point where I would sleep with my phone next to my pillow in case I woke up that way. And I would have to call my mom. Sometimes she would have to drive all the way from Griffin to come and help me. So that's how it started. And it took several months for me to get an accurate diagnosis. I would say about 10 months before I was finally diagnosed with lupus. Wow. And initially I got on medication and I just kept living how I was living. But over the years, as stressful situations in life started to happen, and lupus is induced by stress. It is an autoimmune disease where your body, the unhealthy cells attack the healthy ones because your body doesn't recognize what is a foreign object from what's supposed to be there. And so your immune system kind of kicks into overdrive, attempting to defend you from everything, even your healthy tissue. And so, I got on the medication and I just continued living at first, but lupus is stress induced. And so as stressful things started to happen in my life, my lupus symptoms started to exacerbate. And it seems like it was a spiral effect. So thing after thing after thing. I got fired from a teaching job. Wow. And at the time I was working on my doctorate, I was probably about the midpoint of my doctoral degree when I got fired from my teaching job, which meant I couldn't pay my tuition and my mortgage. And I'm kind of I'm a risk taker when it comes to my life. I've always been a person who felt like, let me go the other way and see what happens. If it doesn't work out, then I can always come back to square zero. Mm-hmm. So I said, well, I'm gonna take a chance and I'm gonna try to finish my doctorate and figure this mortgage thing out, you know, just by working little side hustles, teaching Zumba, picking up different contract jobs or whatever. But that didn't really work out that way. So then my home went into foreclosure. So fired from a teaching job, home went into foreclosure, couldn't get another teaching job because unfortunately the job I was fired from, it just left a bad trail of, there were too many people who worked there who knew me, who had a negative opinion of me that I couldn't immediately go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So things just kind of started to spiral from there.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's a powerful story. And I really appreciate your honesty and transparency and the behind the scenes look that you gave us in terms of what it means to have carry lupus. I'd never heard that description before as well. And you know, looking at a medical situation that's induced by stress, I mean, teaching, what more stressful job out there to induce something like that, you know, when it comes to that situation here. So, you know, you're now faced with a situation where you're dealing with lupus, you're losing your house. Talk to us about the feelings that you were experiencing at that time, because I mean, talk to us about what was going on emotionally.
I honestly felt like a failure because I had been such a high achiever up to that point. And I always felt like I had a certain level of control over my life, that if I make XYZ decisions, I'm going to get ABC results.
Sure.
And that's how life works. Everything is based on the decisions we make. But getting lupus, there was no decision I could have made that would have controlled that. And as I mentioned before, I was very active and lived a healthy, responsible lifestyle. So I wonder, you know, how does a person like me get to a point where I'm sick? Mm-hmm. Okay. And so eventually one of my doctoral advisors, he told me a district that was hiring. It was a district that Dr. Watson, I had said I would never work there.
Wow.
They are a mess, you know, horrible. I would never work there. But at this point, I'm blackballed from the school that fired me. I could have gone back to where I worked before that, but I just didn't want to. I felt like that would be going too far backwards, you know? So I said, no. I made the decision to walk away from that and I'm going to press forward, figure out something new. So I went to this district where I vowed I would never work, got a job right away. And thankfully it was someone who I had worked with years before. She remembered me. She didn't care what happened at the previous school. She said, you know, I'm going to judge you by what I know from when I worked with you before, and she gave me a chance. And so I was able to kind of start turning things around. I wasn't making nearly as much money, but I was making enough to kind of get by, start back paying my mortgage a little bit, paying my tuition a little bit, because I still, in my mind, I had kind of resolved to say, well, I'm going to try to work it out with the house. But if I don't work it out, I'm okay with losing the house. I need to get my doctorate. I know what it feels like to be a homeowner. I still need to see what it's going to feel like to be a doctor. Absolutely. And if I get my doctorate, I can buy another house at another time. So that's kind of how I, you know.
Yeah.
But in the midst of that, I started dating someone and it felt like a really great relationship. He was in a good financial position. I'm going to be very transparent. At that point in my life, I said, you know what? I'm going to only date people who are doing financially better than me because we both not going to get together and struggle. Sure. Okay. So he just looked good on paper and we got along well and everything started out fine. But after a while, the relationship did turn to an abusive one. It started kind of with the controlling behaviors. And I didn't really see him as being controlling in the beginning. I think women never do. Sometimes we don't look as deep into some of the things that people will say to us. I won't just say men because this happens in same-sex relationships too, you know, but the abuser, sometimes we don't recognize the behavior for what it is. So there were a lot of arguments and I'm like, you know, I'm really not used to this, but you know, I just kind of let it go, you know, longer than it did. And it got to a point where one night it did become physically abusive. And Dr. Watson, I literally was coming out of the shower, barely had time to get dressed. And he pretty much just attacked me like what you see in a Lifetime movie where you're kind of standing there and the person just almost appears in front of your face out of nowhere. It was one of those situations where he attacked me. I literally had to run out of the house, barely ran out of the house, grabbed my purse, got in the car, and drove straight to the police station. So it was a one and done kind of situation.
Yeah.
The relationship did end there. But again, here we go, another highly stressful situation. Because after losing that first teaching job, I never got my lupus back under control. So I was constantly having what we call flare-ups. And by the way, everyone, April is Lupus Awareness Month.
Yes.
So when you have a flare-up, that's when your lupus symptoms kind of go into overdrive and you have maybe swelling joints, you have pain. Sometimes you can't walk. For some people, if they have organ damage, your kidneys might go into kidney failure. You might have to be hospitalized. So I wasn't having any organ damage at the time, but I was having a lot of pain. So I was having swollen joints, wasn't able to walk, wasn't able to dress myself, drive myself to work. So by this point, my mom was also living with me most of the time, being my caregiver. Sure. She was driving me to work. So the stress of that situation, dealing with him, it just all got to be too much. So I started missing several days of work to the point where I didn't even have sick days to take. It was like every time I was absent, I would miss a day's pay.
Mm-hmm.
So here I am again, can't pay my mortgage, can't pay my tuition. I had dropped out of the doctoral program at this point. Also couldn't keep up my mortgage payments. So I finally decided that I was gonna stop trying to keep up the mortgage payments because also medications are incredibly expensive, even with insurance.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that, you know, so I finally decided to let the house go. I was able to do a short sale and walk away from the home. But if anyone has ever done that before, I mean, it pretty much looks on your credit just like a foreclosure almost. So when I walked away from the home, I ended up moving back to Griffin, Georgia, getting a one bedroom apartment because that was pretty much all I could afford.
Mm-hmm.
my mother had to quit her job and live with me full time. So I was also taking on the expenses of her care. Sure. So my mom and I, here I was at 35 years old.
Wow.
Almost finishing a doctoral degree. At that point, I had been teaching for about 10 or 11 years. And it felt like everything in my life was going backwards.
Yeah. That is so powerful. I appreciate you being so transparent and honest about the situation. I'm sure there's a lot of folks out there who can relate to it as well. You know, so as you look back, Dr. Blades, on your darkest day, and kudos to your mother, man. Your mother sounds like an amazing, amazing woman. The sacrifice, the way she...
Oh, she's incredible, because my mom was married at the time.
Wow.
And she dropped everything to take care of me.
Yeah, that's powerful, lady. I love it. On your darkest day, though, with all that stuff going on, having a physical condition that, you know, really puts you in a situation where you can't really do much, what kept you going? What kept you fighting on your darkest day?
Well, you know, I had always been an overachiever. And I had always kind of positioned myself to just to do better.
Yeah.
To just have a little bit more than what we had growing up. Mm-hmm. Also, I was always providing for my mom on some level, mm-hmm. always kind of adding, trying to give her things that she needed. And so even though I wasn't really able to do it on the scale to which I had done previous, you know, prior to getting sick, mm-hmm. also just the fact that she was living with me and now I needed to be responsible for her because she was doing so much for me. I knew I just couldn't completely give up.
Yeah.
So I kept teaching, and there were times when I played around with taking medical leave, but I didn't do that. And I know a lot of teachers can relate to this, is that we always feel like, and this is when you really love teaching. If you don't love it, you're not going to understand. But when you really love it, we always feel like nobody can serve our students the way that we do.
Absolutely.
And if I leave, they're not going to get what I could have given them. And we think it's an altruistic thing and we think it's admirable, but it's really selfish.
Yeah.
Because there were lots of days when I would show up to work. And I have to say, I had some amazing coworkers at the time. They were like my family. I was very transparent then with my lupus. I've never been ashamed of it because it's not something I did to myself that, you know, it wasn't my fault. So I wasn't ashamed. And also I knew there might be days where I would need people to help me. And I wanted them to be aware. I wanted them to know I wasn't lazy and I wasn't trying to not do my job. And I hated asking people because I know how much work every teacher has to do.
Sure.
But I knew that if I was going to rely on these people, they deserved to know. So mm-hmm. everyone in the science department, they knew about my lupus and they would make my copies for me. They would get my lunch for me. They would just come and check on me in between classes just to make sure, like, girl, are you okay?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they would cover my classes so I could go and sleep on my planning period because I would be exhausted all of the time. Dr. Watson, I forgot what you asked me because I get so deep into telling this story. You asked me, what kept me going?
Yeah.
What kept me going really was my support system, Dr. Watson. And I said, you know, people are investing so much in me
mm-hmm.
that I can't give up on myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went through a series of different treatments. I've tried every medication that they use to treat lupus, but there's really only one. Well, there's two now. At the time, there was only one drug that was specifically created to treat lupus. Mm-hmm. Everything else, they're treating the symptoms of the other things that happen to you as a result of lupus, but not directly treating the lupus.
Okay.
So I was on steroids for the arthritis and the joint swelling. I was on something else to kind of protect my kidneys. They even had me on a chemo pill, which is like a low dose of chemo called methotrexate. So then that made my hair start falling out. But I just didn't give up because I knew I had a lot of people that were fighting for me, and that kept me going.
So powerful. I'm so glad that you didn't. I'm sure they are they feel the same way as well. So, you know, as you look back on your journey today, Dr. Blades, how would you say that that situation or those instances have contributed to what you're doing now, as you're doing remarkable things across the world? How what's the connection between the two?
Well, in the midst of all that struggle, living in a one bedroom with my mama and all of that, I started dating my husband, which I have no business dating. I was a whole mess. Okay, but he was a friend of mine, and I had known him for like 12 years at the time. So we just kind of started dating just by him checking in on me from time to time. And we got married, and about a year into the marriage, when he took over the role of basically being my caregiver, I basically left my mama's house being taken care of and moved into this one. And my husband was driving me to work and grading my papers on the weekend and doing all that stuff. And he was just like, this is too much. Mm-hmm. And not too much as in he didn't want to do it, but just too much. And why are you going through this when you don't have to?
Sure.
And so 3 weeks into my 17th year of teaching, he was like, you need to take medical leave. Mm-hmm. And I took it.
Wow.
And I would say about a week into my medical leave, he and I, we were up having our coffee every morning like we always do, like 4 o'clock in the morning. And he was like, you ain't going back? And I said, I know I'm not going back. And I had to really, you know, learn to be okay with that, because I loved teaching. Mm-hmm. I really did. Now, at this point, one of my girlfriends had gotten a leadership position in a different school district. This was happening all around the time of me getting married. Mm-hmm. So she got a position in a school district. She was in a school where the class sizes were small. And she said, you know what? I think this is the best place for you to be with your lupus. I'll be there. I'll be your administrator. I can watch you, take care of you. The classes are small, less stress. So she pulled me over to teach at her school. So here again, you know, somebody just caring enough about me being in a position to help to make my situation better. So this is why I could not give up. So I came to that school. I was in a better position, but at that point, Dr. Watson, my health had gotten so bad that even that position wasn't good enough for me to, you know, be well.
Sure.
And so I left on medical leave. And so my husband will always say, though, thank God for lupus, because when I left in that position, I was getting all kinds of opportunities to present at the district, to train in my building, to shadow my principal when she went to different things. And so my husband was like, you've been doing all this presenting and speaking and sharing. He said, wouldn't you just want to do that as a business?
Yeah.
And I was like, well, you know, I kind of thought about it before, but I didn't see myself as a business person. Mm-hmm. I was like, how am I going to do that? And he was like, girl, don't worry about it. You know, you're going to quit. You're going to start your business. And you're going to, he was like, just like you presented at those conferences, present at some more conferences. So I just started finding conferences to present at. And that's how I started to build my business. And so when he and I reflect on it, he will say, you know, if you didn't get lupus, you would have never taken a medical leave. You would have stayed so comfortable in your teaching position. And now you wouldn't be traveling all over the country to other countries. You wouldn't be sharing with all of these teachers. And now the things that you used to do with your 35 students are being duplicated with students all around the country. And so he's like, you know, if that was the thing that it took to shake up your comfort and to get you to move into your next level of greatness, then we have to be thankful for the lupus.
What an amazing husband. What's his name?
His name is Virgil Blades.
Virgil, shout out to Virgil. Awesome guy. Awesome guy. It's great to have a spouse like that in your corner as well. So today, you know, Dr. Blades, you know, we're coming off 2 years where people are out there listening. They've suffered a lot of financial crisis, lost loved ones, lost material possessions, lost jobs, and even in some situations, Dr. Blades have lost hope.
Yes.
So the folks out there who are listening right now, what words of advice can you give them to let them know that a brighter day is going to come?
Well, yeah, for sure. I was, you know, from the time that I quit teaching in 2016, I really didn't get to what you see now, what you hear and see now. I didn't get to that until late 2020. Okay, so I quit my job. I started my business. I was doing well, never gave my body the time to heal. So I was in and out of the hospital really for like 2.5 years. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then finally, I was getting a little bit better, but what really helped me get there was the pandemic when everything stopped and I couldn't do anything but pay attention to me. And it was the best thing for me. I know for some people, their downward spiral didn't start until the pandemic.
Yeah.
And so they're still sitting in it right now. So what I will say to people is that it feels like it's really unique. And it feels like it's just you. It is not just you. We all have had that dark time. And if we haven't had it, unfortunately, and I'm not trying to be negative, but we will. Like at some point, we all are going to face something that's going to really challenge us. But what I'm going to say is that there are people who just care so much about you, even if they're not checking on you. Because there were times when I did feel like people that I had spent a lot of time with, they weren't calling to see how I was doing. But even if people aren't checking on you, it doesn't mean that they don't care. There is somebody who is hanging on to something that you have said to them or done for them at some point that you have long since forgotten about.
Yes.
And those people, they still need you in some kind of way. I will say too, when you're in your dark moment, give it the attention that it needs, because I put off for years facing the series of events that just kept me in that place where I really wasn't taking care of my health, even though I was sick. I wasn't taking the time to take care of me. I was just putting Band-Aids on things.
Sure.
So when you're in the darkness, I mean, take time to pay attention to it and really ask yourself, what am I doing that could be keeping me here? And what are some very small changes that I can make every day to kind of help pull me out? And it's not going to get better overnight a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes something big will happen that will change your situation right away. But most of the time, that's not how it happens. And anybody who you see that looks like they are winning now, you don't know what it cost them to get to that winning season, and you don't know what the losing season looks like. So just give yourself grace, give yourself time, be patient with you as you work through that rebuilding process.
Yes.
And just continue to have faith that it will get better, because it absolutely will get better.
Well, that's some great advice, Dr. Blaze. Very inspiring story. You talk about a person who's been there, done that, a person you can live with and learn from as well. Dr. Blaze, if people want to get a hold of you, what's the best way to get a hold of you as well?
The best way to get a hold of me is through my website, drmarquitablaze.com. They can email me from there. They can get all of my social media links from there, send me messages. I'm on social media all the time and I respond to every message that I get. So
awesome. She's made it very, very easy for you to reach out to her. Reach out to her. Great book, great story. If you're a teacher out there, a lot of practical ideas to make our students' lives better, take advantage of those things as well. So Dr. Blaze, we had a chance to talk about a lot of difficult stuff. You ready to have a little fun now?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. This portion of our show is called our rapid fire purpose questions. I'm gonna ask you some questions around purpose. I want you to give me and the audience your most concise, best answer. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Okay, here we go. What gives your life meaning?
Teaching.
Okay. What one word best describes you?
Resilient.
Okay, love it. Great, 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 great word. What was your favorite thing to do as a kid?
Read.
Good. What problem do you want to solve in our world?
You know what? I want to solve the problem of teachers feeling undervalued and being underpaid.
Oh, I love it. You get a lot of amens to that as well. What do you wish you had more time to do?
I really wish I had more time to cook and write.
Oh, yeah. That's good. What was your favorite thing to do as a kid?
Reading, and writing is second.
Okay, reading, writing second. Okay.
Yep.
And then what does your 15-year-old self imagine you'd be doing right now?
Oh, my 15-year-old self imagined that I would be an English teacher.
Really?
I ended up becoming a science teacher, though.
Really? Okay, very, very close. Very close. Yep. Who inspires you the most?
My mother.
Okay, amazing mom. What's mom's name?
Gloria Parks.
Shout out to Gloria, Miss Gloria Parks. Okay. What's something about yourself that we might be surprised to learn about you?
Oh, probably that my most listened to genre is gangster rap from the 90s.
Hey, I'm a big 90s guy as well. I love it. A West Coast rap. Yes, yes. What is on your bucket list to do within the next year?
Within the next year, it's going to be difficult, but I definitely want to scuba dive.
All right.
And the reason why it's going to be difficult is because I just learned how to swim last year.
Wow. Okay. One step at a time, right? Yep. One step at a time. What's something you'll spend your time doing no matter what?
No matter what? Jeez. Probably watching reality shows that I shouldn't be watching.
Right, you don't need to watch them.
Yeah.
What do you want your grandchildren to say about you someday?
Oh, now that's a toughie. I'm really not the mommy type. So let's say my nephew.
The nephews. Okay.
Okay. What do I want him to say about me someday? I want him to say that, you know what, my Aunt Marquita lived a bold and fearless life.
Yes. I love it. I love it. If you were a superhero, what would your superpower be?
Oh, let's see. My superpower would really be helping people to kind of see the strengths that they have that they overlook in themselves.
Okay, that's a good one. I love it.
Which is a very teacher thing.
Yeah, I love it. What sparks your creativity?
Oh, listen, rap. Rap music, the way they spin words and the analogies they use, yeah, it makes me want to just create something as well.
Love it. I think we got a future rapper right here. Okay. If you became president today, what law would you pass first?
I would erase student loan debt.
Get my vote. Yeah. If you could follow someone around for a day, who would it be and why?
Okay, this is going to tear everybody up because it already got on everybody's nerves. Jay-Z,
all right. Yes. Great pick. What do you love to do for others?
You know what? It's so redundant, but I love sharing information with others, enlightening people.
Okay. What's been the best compliment you've ever received?
Probably when my husband refers to me as being elegant.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Awesome. I love it. If you could follow, let's see here. What's been the one thing you have never been afraid to do?
Try. Yes.
Try. Yeah. Yeah. I love it. What moment from your childhood are you most proud of?
Two. I played Rosa Parks in a school play one time.
Really? Okay.
Yep. And I remember winning a Black History essay contest one time.
Okay. Two good ones. I love it. What does success look like for you?
Now success looks like being able to get up every day and work out and actually complete my workouts with no pain.
Oh, I love it.
It looks like being able to live in my house by myself without a caregiver.
Yeah.
My husband is in Panama right now on business and I'm here. It just looks like being a normal, independent adult because for years I wasn't able to be that.
That's awesome. Very, very beautiful. Yeah. What are you most grateful for?
Definitely most grateful for my support system, my mom and my husband.
Yeah. What's been the biggest lesson you've learned in life?
I guess centered around my illness, the biggest lesson is just to always take time to take care of yourself. Everything else can wait.
Yes, I agree. Very well said. And last but not least, Dr. Blades, how do you want to be remembered in history?
I do want to be remembered as someone who had a passion for teaching, enlightening others, and, you know, just giving people information and confidence to go after the things that they're passionate about.
That is awesome. Dr. Marquita Blades, you survived. Give yourself a round of applause.
Yay!
Awesome job. Awesome job. So as we wrap things up, Dr. Blades, there's two things that our show really focuses on: purpose and resiliency. What last words can you leave our audience with around purpose and resiliency?
Your purpose, a lot of times, is not what you think it is. I think that you discover your purpose out of your own resilience. When you get through those tough things that really challenge you, that is where you're going to discover what your true purpose is.
Awesome. Very well said. And Dr. Blades, again, if people want to get a hold of you, what's the best way to do that?
Yep. Y'all go to my website, drmarquitablades.com. From there, you can catch all of my social media pages, and you can just message me or email me from there as well.
That is awesome. It has been an honor having her on today. Hey, if you're someone out there, you're an overcomer, you have a story, we want to hear from you. Please go to tiawatson.com, share your story with us, subscribe to our podcast, Resilient Stories. Download this episode, rate it, share with your folks on social media. I want to thank you all for hanging out with us today. Dr. Blades, thank you. Everyone else out there, God bless. Peace and deuces, everyone.
Yours truly.
Thank you.
Dr. Watson.